From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 13th day of March 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Don Day will join us at the end of our time together. We'll take a look at the weather forecast with him. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And today, we'll hear from Emerson Nafziger, extension agronomist, retired on campus at the U of I, about how you, as a farmer, can participate in a whole field best management soybean research practices study. That's right, you can help out the university, not only this one, but universities and land grants across the whole of the Midwest, from one north central region state to the other, and that encompasses all 12 states in the region. So stay with us, find out all the details on that as we make our way through this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. From Illinois Public Media, it's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this 13th day of March. We're now joined on a Tuesday, as usual, by Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Hey, good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
In Chicago today, we had a pretty good day. In fact, I'm not sure that many would have thought that soybeans in particular would bounce back so quickly after the 24-cent drop on Friday, but here they are, up 7 cents for the day.
Yeah, this all happened somewhat out of technical and fun buying that started off with the open interest going up 7,298 contracts on Monday and closing higher, and they didn't take out Friday's lows. They were able to hold those. Also over in the wheat, they were up 9,702 contracts yesterday in the open interest, and the corn up 16,224 up. So the funds have been in there buying, and they're coming back in. And then we saw a little blip, a little about midday, a little after, with comments come out of the president of COFCO, China's largest food company, stating that escalating the trade war would be a blow to the economy, and he downplayed the prospects of beans being used as a political football. And that buoyed the beans on up to make their run up that they backed off late, but still closed, you know, strong on the day.
And as we'll hear in our news segment in just a bit, some different news coming out of Washington, D.C. in the last 30 minutes or so about a meeting last week that the president had discussing intellectual property rights and China. And there could be some real tough trade negotiations that happened there. He was asked, I don't know, Wayne, whether you've caught this yet or not, last week maybe to come up with a number. And Lighthizer brought him a $30 billion estimate, and he said, aim higher. So we'll see.
Aim higher.
Aim higher. So we'll see how all
that
changes.
That's not what we needed to pop up as far as the bean market for continuation of the rally, because I'm sure if we start coming with numbers like that, that COFCO might not feel quite as good. It's that time of year when basically Brazil's beans are coming on. They're going to have a good supply out of there for a while, so they can play a few games with us if they want to by not buying the beans from us. But that does make things a little shaky.
So it'll be interesting to watch and see how all of this spins and turns out. And we'll learn more, I suppose, over the next several hours as the other news agencies and the president begins to respond to this release of information, and we'll find out what all of that means. In the bean space, what have farmers been talking to you about? Mostly, I suppose, you've been finishing up crop insurance, I would think.
Yeah, we've done a lot of crop insurance last few days. Everybody's keeping their levels fairly high or increasing a little bit because of the volatility factor being down, and they can actually move up one, you know, and a step up on what the cheapness or less cost will be. So that's going real well, but the farmers doing that. A lot of them are trying to think a little bit more where they ought to put a little more corn or beans on at these levels up towards the highs, because they are scared of that black swan, like this intellectual properties and that coming along. So, you know, the guys that haven't got hardly anything sold have been pricing or putting some puts underneath or actually pricing some cash grain in here.
And deadline is March 15?
March 15th, yes. Thursday night at midnight, we're supposed to be done with our crop insurance. So, you know, a lot of us will be working late on Thursday night. You know, one of the things we noticed today was that the DDGs are trading at $150 a ton, and last year at this time, they were only trading at $50 a ton, and we were feeling how bad it was to be shut out of China on the DDGs, but looks like the rest of the world's picking those up.
Yeah, so is that on exports, or are they being used to feed livestock in the United States, or both?
I think both. I think, you know, we're doing pretty good on other exports, but I think, you know, the livestock numbers are up in the U.S., and, you know, we're having a lot of good meat exports. That's one thing we don't want to get thrown into this trade war, too, also is our meat exports, because we've been shipping a lot of meat out of the country.
I suppose if DDGs are higher in price, that's probably good news for corn down the road.
Yeah, basically that helps support the corn price along the way, and also it's good for the ethanol business too. And remember, we upped the usage quite a bit in the ethanol in the last government report, and it's good if we can, you know, make it so they can pay a little more for the corn to do that. So, and talking about the corn, Brazil's got all these good crops and all the good grain going on, but their farmers are holding really tight. And we heard of some Argentine corn actually moving into Brazil here this week.
Oh, interesting. Anything else before I let you go for the day?
Oh, unfortunately, the Australian Weather Bureau put out a notice that said La Nina has ended.
Oh, well, you made it all winter long. You only made the call for La Nina all winter.
So, there you go.
There's your word of the day. Hey, thank you so much, Wayne, and we'll talk with you again next week. That, of course, is Wayne Nelson. He is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon. You can join us tomorrow evening, if you'd like, for a Will Ag Marketing Panel. We'll be in Clinton, Illinois at 140 Sunset Court. That's out on the west side at the Richland Community College building. That's in Clinton, Illinois. This one's sponsored by HOW, University of Illinois Extension. Our panelists tomorrow will include Kurt Kimball, Chip Nellinger, and Todd Hubbs. Doors open at 6:30. We'll be again at the Richland Community College building in Clinton. In today's agricultural news, we'll lead with this one. President Donald Trump is getting ready to crack down on China. This according to Politico. Trump told cabinet secretaries and top advisors during a meeting at the White House last week that he wanted to soon hit China with steep tariffs and investment restrictions. That in response to allegations of intellectual property theft. During the meeting, which hasn't been previously reported, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer presented Trump with a package of tariffs that would target the equivalent of some $30 billion a year in Chinese imports. In response, Trump urged Lighthizer to aim for an even bigger number, and he instructed the administration officials to be ready for a formal announcement in the coming weeks. That, according to two people, says Politico, involved in the administration's trade deliberations. That sent senior officials at the White House, Treasury Department, State Department, Justice Department, the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative, and other key agencies scrambling this week to finalize the proposal. While the details were still in flux, aides said the administration is considering tariffs on more than 100 Chinese products, ranging from electronics and telecommunications equipment to furniture and toys. Those tariffs are expected to be rolled out as soon as next week. Let's stay with trade, Mr. Trump, and add farmers to the mix. U.S. farmers are running a TV advertisement aimed directly at the president that warns that foreign nations retaliating over the tariffs will devastate ag exports. To ensure that Mr. Trump sees their message, the ads will air next month on shows he's known to watch, Fox and Friends, Fox Business, and MSNBC's Morning Joe in both the Washington, D.C. and West Palm Beach, Florida media markets. We'll continue with the trade theme as the North American Free Trade Agreement talks are ongoing and likely will be for several more months. Dairy farmers are in a balancing act, and not just because of the situation with Canada. Mexico is a vital market for U.S. dairy producers, and National Milk Producers Federation spokesperson says a new NAFTA should do no harm to dairy trade with Mexico.
The U.S. shipped $1.2 billion worth of dairy products in 2016. That's up from $200 million. Just in 2002, and a much smaller number back, say, in 1992, right before NAFTA was implemented.
Galen says dairy farmers want to prevent the administration from walking away from NAFTA. However, with Canada, there are changes that need made, changes that have yet to be addressed in the trade agreement talks.
Specifically, it's the fact that almost unique among all other aspects of the Canadian market, the dairy market there in Canada is really closed off to us. And in fact, what little access we had to Canada in the last 5-10 years has been closed off as of about a year ago because of a change in their pricing policy.
An American Farm Bureau Federation official said last week that dairy farmers should expect the complex market issues between the U.S. and Canada to be one of the last things addressed in the trade talks. Meanwhile, Galen says that as the world's middle class continues to grow, it's more and more important that the U.S. have free trade deals around the world. He says that would allow American farmers to meet the need of the growing dairy diet internationally. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Now up next, a discussion with Emerson Nafziger. I asked him a bit about a soybean research project that producers can participate in if they allow their whole field data to be used.
We've got a project for covering four crop years. It's a three-year project led by people at the University of Nebraska, funded by the North Central Soybean Research Program, which is funded by soybean checkoff dollars. So Illinois farmers are certainly donating towards this. And we think it's kind of a useful project. It's trying to collect information from hundreds, thousands of soybean fields across the Corn Belt, each of these four crop years, 2014 through 2017, to see if we can, well, just with a sort of big data approach, figure out what it is that makes yields what they are with different weather and soil conditions and so on. So they've divided the Corn Belt up into sort of management zones, if you would, but millions of acres in these zones where we expect that the response to weather of the soybean crop and to management is going to be similar within those zones. So it's not a easy thing to describe in some ways, but I think the data being collected for it are going to be pretty useful in seeing kind of where we go next with research on soybean management and maybe even where the genetics will head and some of these kinds of things. As our part of it here in Illinois, we're supposed to collect data from about 500 soybean fields a year for each of those four crop years. We have not really gotten very close to that yet, and so we're making one last push here in March of 2018 to get these forms in from anybody who's willing to provide them. So we can look at go to the bulletin. I just posted my last request for information there, and are willing to send people a $50 gift card if they'll fill out one of these forms. We'd like four fields described, and the information that's needed is not very complicated. A lot of it's off the top of your head, actually. We'd like planting date and seeding rate and variety and then the yield for a field. We don't need yield monitor data. We're not looking for anything like that, just a number saying what the yield in that field was. And we're still trying to gather some data from 2016 if we can, but our focus is on 2017, this last year, and trying to get this information. So we need field location and then these other management things with the yield. And they'll use the modern technology to get soil types and this sort of thing. But nobody's going to have their name identified. We're not asking for any names on these. We don't really care about that, and it's not going to be even part of the record on them. So nobody need fear that any of their secrets are going to get out. And this is our last chance to try to meet our quota for this, which we've had trouble doing.
I guess I think of this a bit like going to the coffee shop and if with your good friends, relatively speaking, but that everybody starts to talk about what they do in the field. And you say, man, I wish I knew what this neighbor did and whether that worked or didn't work any better than what I do. And it's all collected and aggregated in this case. So you get a better idea if there are a bunch of those neighbors that are doing one thing, that management might be good, and it might only be good in one geographic area. And you can see that once you gather all of this data up. So it works much more, in my mind, a bit like that.
One good example of that is planting date. Now, we've done a lot and talked a lot about planting date for soybean, but this, over a wide area here, it actually takes planting date. And not only does it say, you know, what yields tend to be with different planting dates, but it also says when you plant in this geography with these soils, when you plant late, then you're much more likely to, say, get a drought stress. Because it, with today's technology, you can look at daily weather and you look at soils and weather for any given field. Now you can have a record of pretty much everything that went on there weather-wise in that soil. And so you can actually paint a pretty complete picture. Once you have the management information, then it starts to sort of spin out what it is that's the best management in this region for soybeans. And so I've been interested in this for many years. I remember getting data from a soybean yield club in southern Illinois probably 25 years ago, and I thought, wouldn't that be interesting if, you know, we had 1,000 fields in Illinois that you kind of knew what had been done management-wise there over the years, and you'd start to say, this is actually, you know, every field's a plot, and this is just a big experiment, and we can see what practices actually increase yields and which ones don't seem to.
So if you've ever thought to yourself, if they only did whole field research, I would be happy. Well, there are arguments both sides of that, but this is where you pony up, I think, that if you've thought that to yourself, and I know you have, now's the time to go visit the Bulletin website at bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu. Look for Emerson Nafziger's latest article. It'll be right there at the top, probably. And you can download and fill out those forms and send them back in. Thanks so much, Emerson, for being with us.
Sure, glad to do that. Spring break's coming up, and people can have their students who are sitting around home without anything better to do earn $50 for an hour or two of work. It's not a bad deal.
This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. Don Day is here now with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
It has been off and on cold and warm and sunny and cloudy here, but I think that's pretty expected for this time of year. Spring is arriving much sooner than later. Can you tell me how things are setting up across the United States and start wherever you'd like?
Well, it really has been an up and down pattern. And as you said, it's that time of year when we start to see that. But really, the main focal points of the biggest weather events over the last week, and this will be the case through this week, is on the coast. Stormy weather along the East Coast, New England, and we've got a wet pattern that's hitting the far western areas of the United States where they could really use it. More good news for California, more rain coming there, more Sierra snows as well. These systems coming off the West Coast will translate eastward. We do expect a pretty active pattern across the lower 48 states here in the coming next 3 weeks. We're going to see several storms go west to east, coast to coast, and this will affect a large swath of the nation, unfortunately. Some of those dry areas in winter wheat country of Colorado, Kansas, down into portions of Oklahoma, Texas, are still looking to be drier than normal.
Well, let's concentrate on the Delta region. So from Memphis southward, I would think, they'll be the first set, along with some of the southeast states, trying to put soybeans, maybe corn, into the ground, cotton as well in some of those places. What do conditions look like in that area?
Well, they're going to see plenty of opportunity for precipitation. The situation with the rainfall is that it's going to be fairly evenly spread, meaning we don't see one concentrated area of any heavy rainfall. So I don't see any delays, and I do see some ample moisture for the things going in the ground.
And temperatures will come up nicely?
They will. Right now, we don't see any areas down in those areas you just mentioned that look to be threatened with any late season cold, although temperatures are going to be only averaging close to normal.
One final question, this for the northwestern part of the Corn Belt, the Dakotas, maybe parts of Minnesota. They have been dry the further into the Dakotas you go. However, they're also thinking about really a cool start to the season there? Do you have any indication?
Well, it certainly looks that way. The trend that we've seen this winter, which has been the coldest weather along the northern tier of the U.S., stretching from the northern Rockies to the northern plains and into those northwest Corn Belt areas, that's likely going to continue, at least through the month of April.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report for a Tuesday afternoon. Tomorrow evening, I hope you can join us in Clinton, Illinois at the Richland Community College building there. That's in Clinton and not Decatur. At 6:30, this Will Ag Marketing Panel is sponsored by WHOW. That's the Big 1520 in Clinton. We'll be there with Jared White and Randy Miller and company, and glad to have them on hand as we'll discuss the marketplace with Kurt Kimmel, Chip Nellinger, and Todd Hubbs. You can be there too. That's at Richland Community College in Clinton, Illinois, 6:30 tomorrow evening. Details online at willag.org.